Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Produced at the Recording Library of West Texas. Your narrator is Jack.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading articles from Cowboys and Indians magazine. A Maker's Mark by Hunter Hawk. During his childhood at Window Rock, Arizona, noted knife maker Astasa Antonio developed a profound connection to his Navajo heritage. I grew up going to ceremonies, hearing the language, having a very deep interaction with the Navajo philosophy and the Navajo way of life, the 27-year-old artisan says. The fundamental way of life is a search, the active, conscious effort to stay in beauty. At every point, there's something beautiful that you can focus on. Our conversation at that moment was focused on Asata's talent for forging and crafting knives. I specifically wanted to know more about a piece he had sent my way from his artisan's brand, Red Crow by Big Knife. As we talked, I was holding the Hunter's Moon field knife, noting the weathered quality and intricate stitchwork of the leather sheath, the gorgeous two-tone finish of the wooden handle, and the smooth angles of the blade itself. Asata explained the meaning behind the five-star constellation design scored into one side of the sheath. I remembered hearing stories of how deer responded to moon phases and that Native American hunters would utilize celestial patterns to organize hunts and the ceremonial practices surrounding a hunt, he said. As a hunter, you would offer prayers and songs to the celestial hunting bow, the Cassiopeia constellation. Whether the adventure is a hunt or a wilderness trek, this knife could serve as not only a tool, but also a symbol of connection to the power of nature. He made his first knife at 13 at home in Arizona, after he saw Benicio del Torgo forge weapons from found materials in the action thriller The Hunted. I just turned the TV off, ran outside, and started to try to find materials. I actually ended up working with an old spoon. I would take spoons, stick them into our fireplace, and wait until I couldn't touch them anymore. I'd run out to this flat piece of metal and start hammering. At a certain point, my mom was like, "Where are all the spoons?" Missing flatware was less important to Asata's mom than seeing her son become passionate about his new skill. She encouraged him to attend a knife-making workshop taught by Jason Hawk, who would later rise to fame in the reality show Mountain Men. It was there that everything came together in Asata's young mind. It was just very inclusive, dynamic, had so many different parts to it. You heat it up, you hammer it, you shape it, you heat treat it, and then you file that, sharpen it, put a handle on. It keeps your mind engaged throughout the whole process. Knife making has long since become a soulful exercise. As a professional these days, with appearances around the country and on TV, forged in fire, Asata continues to find meaning in creating pieces for his Red Crow line. The most important thing to me when I deliver a knife to someone is that it gets them in touch with a sense of spirituality, or that they feel that like they have a tool that lets them go into nature in a way they feel safe. Find out more about Asata Antonio's line of custom knives at redcrow, redkrow.com, or see him in person at Santa Fe's Indian Market this August. Welcome to the rodeo. Oh, say, can you see the flag waving, the chute opening, and the dust flying? Come with us to some of the summer's top rodeos. By Wendy Wilkinson. Sit in the packed arena stands on any given weekend, turn up Garth Brooks' 1991 hit single Rodeo, extolling the dust and the mud and the bulls and the blood, peruse photographer Andy Anderson's dramatic Montana series All the Bucking Horses, there's proof everywhere that the sport of rodeo continues to captivate hundreds of thousands of spectators, drawing top competitors from around the country and providing some of the best entertainment on dirt. To borrow from Garth again, it's the ropes and the reins and the joy and the pain, and they call the thing rodeo. The term rodeo comes from the Spanish rodear, meaning to surround or go around. First used in American English about 1834 to denote a roundup of cattle, the word and the activity it describes might date from the 16th century, when Spanish conquistadors introduced horses and cattle in the Southwest. In the 1800s, American cowboys and Mexican vaqueros working the vast cattle ranches of the region would have riding and roping contests. Their competitive cowboying became a form of entertainment, eventually evolving into the organized professional sport we know today. It's thought that the first rodeo took place more than 100 years ago in Deer Trail, Colorado, during a cowboy feud over who was best at breaking wild horses. The competition became our modern saddle bronc riding event. Today's most popular events include tie-down roping, team roping, steer wrestling, bareback bronc riding, bull riding, barrel racing, and, of course, saddle bronc riding. In the 21st century, women's events get stronger and stronger. In addition to barrel racing, breakaway roping has become one of rodeo's most popular events, and junior bull riding can now be seen along with good old mutton busting. So put on your best pressed wet Wranglers, boots and hat, and head out for some rodeo action this summer. Here are some of the season's best. The Days of 76, Deadwood, South Dakota, July 25th to July 30th. The Days of 76, that give this famous rodeo its name, hark back to the year 1876, when miners, mule skinners, and ultimately madams came to settle in the Dakota territories, and the discovery of gold in the southern Black Hills set off one of the great gold rushes in the country's history. The Black Hills gold rush would fuel Deadwood's heyday from 1876 to 1879, drawing icons of the Wild West like Wild Bill Hickok, Calamity Jane, and Wyatt Earp, and as many as 25,000 residents at the town's population peak. The Days of 76 rodeo first kicked off a century ago as a way to pay tribute to those first Deadwood pioneers. This year, the rodeo celebrates 100 years, making it easily Deadwood's longest-running annual event. Honored as the PRCA Rodeo of the Year 19 times, the six-day rodeo attracts the best cowboys and cowgirls around the world. In addition to the best contestants and stock in the business, rodeo clown Justin Rumford will be bringing his unique form of comedy to entertain the audience. With the town's geography limiting the rodeo's size, Deadwood, which is situated at more than 4,500 feet in the northern Black Hills, lies in a canyon. It hasn't been possible to add women's breakaway roping. A special roping event is planned for August, though. Saddle bronc riding remains a fan favorite. What makes it so special is that we embrace tradition, down to old wooden bucking chutes, says Chris Roberts, a board member of the Days of 76 and chairman of the 2022 event. What the spectators can see are acts that belong in Deadwood, like horse-drawn and other wagon reenactments. This year, the rodeo will be reenacting the killing of Wild Bill Hickok in August of 1876 and a stagecoach holdup that took place more than 100 years ago. These historical embellishments make the days of 76 much different than other rodeos, Roberts says. Historic parades will stretch along Deadwood's Main Street on Friday and Saturday, and Native American dance will be spotlighted at the Paja Sapa Cowboys and Indians Art Festival in Outlaw Square. As far as other things to see and experience, it's all about the Old West in Deadwood, including the Gold Rush era architecture that earned the town its designation as a National Historic Landmark District, and the Days of 76 Museum, where visitors can learn about the rodeo's inception and the mile-long historic parade. The museum spotlights the city's past cast of characters and a huge collection of historic rifles, Robert says. Other sites of interest include the Adams Museum and the Mount Moriah Cemetery, where Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane are buried. The Days of 76 Rodeo, 1876 Drive, Deadwood, South Dakota, 800-999-1876, daysof76.com. Livingston Roundup Rodeo, Livingston, Montana, July 2nd to July 4th. Who would ever guess that the Livingston Roundup Rodeo has its roots in New York City with Charlie Murphy, a Livingston local who was overseeing the stock at Madison Square Garden Rodeo in 1924. Murphy brought 28 of his top bucking horses from the Big Apple back to Montana, and the next year the Roundup Rodeo was born in Park County. Far-sighted local businessmen expanded the roundup to include riding, roping, and bulldogging contests for the amusement of Livingston citizens, making the event one of 9 Class A rodeos in the country. 98 years later, what better place to kick off the 4th of July weekend than at the Livingston Roundup Rodeo? The 3-day event boasts some of the best of summer arena action, as well as some of the top rough stock in the West. We're an evening rodeo starting at 8 p.m., says Bruce Becker, president of the Roundup Rodeo Association. We always have a sold-out crowd. We sell 15,000 tickets over 3 nights. Becker says they'd love to add breakaway roping to the contests, to the events, but they don't have enough room. It takes 3 times as much space when you run cattle in an arena, he says. If we have 100 breakaway ropers, we would need 33 calves. But they've added slack for overflow contestants who will compete on July 1st and 5th. Barrel racing is so popular that, in addition to the 15 riders who compete during regular rodeo, another 100 compete on July 5th and can go on to win a main event. Becker calls the roundup, as it's known locally, a destination rodeo. It's just 50 miles from Yellowstone National Park. Many tourists will plan their summer vacation around a visit to the park and then rodeo. There is also a smaller rodeo in Red Lodge and one in Cody, Wyoming, the same weekend. Between the 3 rodeos, there's more than $600,000 up for grabs, and the cowboys can compete in all of them. Livingston Roundup Rodeo, Park County Fairgrounds and Parks, 46 View Vista Drive, Livingston, Montana, 406-222-3199, livingstonroundup.com. The Reno Rodeo, Reno, Nevada, June 16th to June 25th. The state of Nevada declares it the wildest, richest rodeo in the West. Whatever superlatives apply, the Reno Rodeo delivers 10 days of family fun, and the PRCA-sanctioned event frequently features in USA Today's top 10 readers' choices. More than 140,000 fans attend each year. Now the 4th richest rodeo in the country, the Reno Rodeo comes from humble beginnings. More than 100 years ago, a commercial club, the precursor to the Reno Chamber of Commerce, decided to create a carnival of sorts to celebrate the end of World War I and highlight some of the state's finest herders of cattle and proclaimers of horsemanship. The first time out of the chute, the event was dubbed the Nevada Roundup, with the hope to bring a large number of visitors and locals alike to see these rodeo events. It worked, and as the 21st century, the now-named Reno Rodeo has brought in over $52 million to the local economy. Even though the Reno Rodeo is steeped in a century of Western tradition, the city of Reno is a modern destination full of casinos and a vibrant nightlife. Reno Rodeo General Manager George Combs calls the area a great vacation spot, with the rodeo front and center. Not only are we a top five rodeo in the country out of 650 rodeos, but our spectators get to see the best that rodeo has to offer, including mutton busting and a wild pony races, he says. This year, we're going to be bringing in miniature bull riding for the kids. We have two arenas, and we've got events going on all day in one arena, with highlighted events taking place in the other arena at night. Women's barrel racing has really become popular, and after testing women's breakaway roping, a new sport that has garnered a lot of enthusiasm, we brought it back as a full rodeo event last year, and it was well received. Roping events go on for 4 days. Then the rodeo wraps up with the final two evenings of the best performances and Diamonds in the Desert, a high-end horse sale where horses range in price from $20,000 to $100,000. Although there are lots of golf courses and casinos in Reno, for Combs, the standout must-visit is beautiful Lake Tahoe, a 45-minute drive from the action and a treasure for the Reno area. The Reno Rodeo, Reno, Nevada, Reno Sparks Livestock Event Center, 1350 North Wells Avenue, Reno, Nevada, 775-329-3877, renorodeo.com. Cheyenne Frontier Days, Cheyenne, Wyoming, July 22nd to July 31st. Touted as the world's largest outdoor rodeo and Western celebration, Cheyenne Frontier Days has been around since 1897, earning it the loving nickname, the Daddy of them All. These days, it's known for blending great sport with great entertainment. 10 full days of music, kids' activities, Western-themed events, and naturally, rodeo. It consistently makes annual lists of top summer festivals in the country. Sometimes it looks like a three-ring circus, where kids can enjoy steer riding and other activities, says Cheyenne Frontier Days CEO Tom Hersig. A big draw is the Riata Ranch Cowboy Girls, who come in from California and will be entertaining our audiences daily with trick riding and roping and even shooting. Perhaps the biggest hit of the rodeo is the colt races, where the young colts run to their mothers across the arena. Breakaway roping is also a fan favorite. Women have been favorites at the rodeo since the early days. Last year commemorated the rodeo's 125th anniversary, when concert headliners included Garth Brooks and Ned Ledoux. That year almost marked the 50th anniversary of Wyoming native Chris Ledoux's release of the album Songs of the Rodeo Life. Ledoux, a beloved Hall of Famer rodeo champ and singer-songwriter, has become synonymous with Cheyenne Frontier Days, and a statue of him atop a bucking bronc, unveiled in the big anniversary year, now greets visitors to Frontier Park. In addition to traditional rodeo, professional bull riding will return to the CFD arena for 2 nights, July 25th and 26th, boasting the rankest bulls and the toughest cowboys in the world going head-to-head on the Wyoming dirt. The event will serve as the launch for the inaugural PBR team season, the first team-based league in the sport of bull riding. The series' initial 10-event, 112-game regular season will include a 3-day home venue event hosted by each of the 8 founding teams, including the team owned by Teton Ridge, the Arizona Ridge Riders. The Ridge Riders Days will be held at the Gila River Arena in Glendale, Arizona, October 14 to 16. It's easy to spend a whole week at Cheyenne Frontier Days without leaving the venues, except maybe to sleep. For several mornings, you can attend one of the parades, and on the other mornings, we offer a pancake breakfast. Sometimes that means feeding upward of 10,000 people, a feat that requires mixing the pancake batter in cement mixers. Next, perhaps a visit to Frontier Town for some shopping or enjoy Native American dancing and storytelling at the Indian Village in the morning. The rodeo starts at noon, and the day finishes with one of our first-rate concerts. Cheyenne Frontier Days, 4610 Cary Avenue, Cheyenne, Wyoming, 800-426-5009, cfdrodeo.com. Pike's Peak or Bust Rodeo, Colorado Springs, Colorado, July 13 to July 16. The Pike's Peak or Bust Rodeo has been around since 1937, but its roots go back to the Shankiva, a Ute homecoming celebration that took place 1911 to 1913. The oldest continuous residents of Colorado, the Utes were forced from their ancestral and aboriginal homeland there and banished to barren lands farther west when pioneers moved in. Forbidden to ever return, they celebrated finally being able to with a pilgrimage from Utah to Colorado Springs, led by Chief Buckskin Charlie, a.k.a. Sapia. The Utes celebrated with a festival that included horse races and riding contests, which they reached when they reached the land of their sacred Tavakiavi, Pike's Peak. For several decades, the rodeo didn't have a permanent home. That changed when Colorado Springs founder Spencer Penrose worked with the city to build the 10,000-seat Will Rogers Stadium, which was renamed the Spencer Penrose Stadium upon his death. Now, rodeo athletes compete in the Invitational Championship Rodeo in the state-of-the-art Norris Penrose Event Center, which boasts a beautiful, recently renovated arena. In 2022, the four-day event will rise to a new level of excitement when the best in pro rodeo come to Colorado Springs and the Pikes Peak or Bust Rodeo, in partnership with Cinch, welcomes for the first time the 2022 National Finals Rodeo Open, one of the biggest rodeos of the 2022 pro rodeo season. While exciting entertainment is the rodeo's goal, the event's inspiration is fundraising to support the local military, with close to $4 million raised to date. Rodeo winners from the 12 regions in Canada will come to Colorado Springs to compete in the National Finals Open, says Scott Johnson, vice president of the rodeo. Winners from the National Finals December rodeo will also be competing here locally. This rodeo will be the second only to the Las Vegas-based National Finals in talent and scope, with $1 million in prize money and televised on RFD TV. Johnson says the rodeo is very user-friendly. We keep it to a taut 2 hours, he said. As far as the excitement goes, women's breakaway roping will be featured every evening here for the first time. It's definitely the new game in town. This is a quick 2 or 3 second event with about 24 competitors. Saturday night competitive bull riding is a fan favorite, led by all-time money winner J.B. Mooney. Johnson suggests rodeo attendees experience Colorado Springs' cultural renaissance by visiting the new Olympic and Paralympic Museum downtown, as well as taking a train trip on the newly renovated historic Manitou and Pikes Peak Cog Railway up to the top of America's Mountain. The Pikes Peak or Bust Rodeo, Norris Penrose Event Center, 1045 Rio Grande Street, Colorado Springs, Colorado. 719-635-3547, PikesPeakOrBust.org. Rodeo bullfighter Roach Hedeman looks back on decades of protecting riders, Entertaining Crowds, and Cheating Death by Christian McFate. At a small rodeo on the outskirts of Wichita Falls, Gary Roach Hedman stares at an empty red dirt arena, recalling the time Panhandle Slim, a legendary bucking bull, stepped on his head. "Oh, hell, this is going to hurt," he recalls thinking. "That son of a bitch used to run over me all the time," Hedman says. "He didn't break anything. I got lucky. He usually turned back and spun closer to the pins, but he went farther. My timing was off." Nowadays, Roach, 61, spends his time judging small bull riding competitions around Texas instead of fighting bulls as a rodeo clown. He's also been hosting auctions and benefit shows for rodeo friends who are all older and facing health issues. The rodeo life isn't known for its good retirement and health insurance packages. Roach has had to work several odd jobs to make ends meet, and when he was married, rely on his wife, who worked for a school district, to provide health insurance. It's a warm September evening in 2021, and the retired rodeo clown seems larger than life, walking along the bullpens, bull riders, and stock contractors behind the rodeo arena. He moves slower than he did when he was younger, in cleats, elbow, knee, and hip pads, for when he was sore, and tape for his ankles. White paint around his eyes and mouth, red paint on his nose. He wore a black peace sign under his right eye, a blue teardrop under his left one, and double R's on his dent on his chin for him and a childhood friend who accidentally shot and killed himself when they were younger. But he quit wearing the makeup in the 90s. "They weren't called bullfighters back then," he says. Roach wears his rodeo clown scars proudly, including a burn scar that covers the left side of his body from the belly up. He got it from the malfunction of a gunpowder trick that also blew off his thumb. He greets the cowboys and cowgirls with a nod and a smile. "This mother F is the best bullfighting, bull riding mother F I've ever seen," one announces as we walk past. Okay, I'll give you your $5 later," Roach tells him and laughs. Their admiration, in part, has to do with Roach's legacy. Along with his involvement in the New Mexico Junior Rodeo Association, the National High School Rodeo Association, National Intercollegiate Rodeo Association, and Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association, he fought bucking bulls at more than 400 rodeos, including the 1996 National Finals and the Professional Bull Riders World Finals between 1996 and 1999. He also raised Biloxi Blues, the 2006 World Champion Bucking Bull, and was inducted into the Texas Rodeo Hall of Fame in 2014. "I think everyone else was sick that year," he jokes. For several decades, he entertained fans with Buster the Beach Dog and Trigger, a Palomino pony he trained to count, play dead, and say prayers. They're dead now. Roach smiles when he mentions their names. Only about a dozen of the 27 bull riders expected on this early September evening have shown up to ride for the $4,000 purse. It would have been even larger amount, Roach says, if more riders had paid the entry fee. Roach's eyes lose focus, and he pushes back his cowboy hat and shakes his head. "It's not like it used to be. When we were young and getting on bulls, there would have been 59 guys standing here wanting to get on the bulls. We would have been turning them down, not having enough bulls for them to ride. I've been saying it for 25 years now. Rodeo and bull riding is slowly dying." Roach gravitated toward the rodeo clowns in the 1960s when he was a child in northeastern New Mexico and El Paso. He earned his nickname at 4 years old from a family friend who told Roach's father, "That boy gets into everything. He's just like a cockroach." He began hanging out with the rodeo clowns, who in turn would let him help them with their clown acts. His father, Red Hedman, worked at a racetrack in New Mexico in the summer and in El Paso in the winter. Roach's youngest brother, Tuff, was the only one of the seven siblings born in the Lone Star State. I used to tell him as a little kid, "They just found you. You're adopted. They found you down on the plaza," Roach recalls behind the bullpens at the Wichita Falls Rodeo. As a kid, Roach rode steers just like every other ranch kid, roped calves and ran barrels. He credits professional bull rider Cody Lambert's father, Cliff, and a bunch of other racetrackers for building an arena on the outskirts of El Paso where they would play and practice all day long. "I think Tuff was like four when he rode his first calf," he says. "He was so scared, but he didn't let go until the very end and won it. Everybody thought he was, well, he ended up being what they thought he was." Tuff became a world champion bull rider, the former president of the Professional Bull Riders Association, and a member of the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame. Today, he runs Tuff Hedeman Bull Riding Tour, which offers action-packed bull riding events at rodeo arenas around the country. It all started at that arena in El Paso. When we started really moving up and practicing, we didn't have anyone to be the bullfighter while we practiced, Roach says. "I just started doing it." Roach's friend Roger Fabian had been bullfighting at high school and junior rodeo competitions in the 70s. Roach, who was 15 then, started helping him. He'd ride his 8-second ride as a bull rider, get off, and then in his boots and spurs, work as a rodeo clown, earning, he says, an extra $35 for doing it. He eventually got letters of recommendation from a couple of rodeo clowns and a stock owner so he could become a rodeo bullfighter apprentice in the PRCA. As an apprentice, he worked 5 rodeos in a year before he got his PRCA card. As for training, an old rodeo bullfighter, Jimmy Anderson, once told him, if his head's cocked to the left, you go to the left. If his head's cocked to the right, you go to the right. That was it, Roach says. That was about all the instructions I got. Roach held the suitcase bomb in his lap at a rodeo arena in Utopia, a small South Texas town with a post office, a fire station, and a general store. An early morning in 1985, he was hoping that his cleaning hat trick worked better than it did the night before when it blew smoke like a dud firecracker instead of exploding the cowboy hat. The general store owner came up to him after the first night of the rodeo and said, "Is it supposed to go like that?" "No, it was supposed to blow up the hat," Roach said. "Your gunpowder's old," replied the store owner. "Come down to the store and I can fix you up." He offered everything from ham to black powder at his store back then, Roach says. The next morning, Roach decided to do a few practice runs to make sure his hat trick worked. Basically how it works, he says, is he'd have a bicycle pump with a long air hose on it with a balloon attached to a small pipe at the end. He'd go up to a cowboy and ask him if he could clean his hat for free, and then pump up one balloon and put the cowboy hat on it. He'd tell the crowd, "One more puff of air to clean the hat," and push a button that would ignite the gunpowder and cause the hat to explode, and the cowboy to chase Roach around the arena. Quail Dobbs, a legendary Texas rodeo clown, taught him the trick. "He took me under his wing," Roach says. "He didn't measure the gunpowder. He'd just pour it from a little bag, and he'd say, 'I like a big boom,' and pour a little more powder, and then a little more." In the 1980s, Roach worked for Bad Company Rodeo, an award-winning stock company that his friend and former roommate, Mac Altizer, another inductee into the Texas Rodeo Cowboy Hall of Fame, had founded in the early 80s. He created what would become the model for entertaining fans at the rodeo, using pyrotechnics and rock and roll. "We're like brothers," Roach says. "We grew up and went through junior rodeo all together in college." He's a great all-around cowboy. Roach started doing the cleaning hat trick and to earn a few extra bucks. At the time, he was only clearing about $150 to $250 per performance, but a specialty act increased that amount, depending on its popularity. Another rodeo clown helped him make the suitcase bomb at the Utopia Rodeo Arena. The first two attempts, Roach says, the trick worked perfectly. On the third attempt, when he reached over to grab the suitcase to put it in his lap, it exploded. I was at the point of crying, says Altizer, who was the stock contractor at the Utopia Rodeo. We all got lucky on that one. We were only about 30 miles from the burn center in Kerrville. If that had happened a million other places, he wouldn't have... At the rodeo in Wichita Falls, Roach shakes his head, recalling the tragedy more than 30 years later. A reminder of the incident scars the left side of his body. If I'd been sitting above it, he says, I wouldn't be here. It wasn't his first or last time to escape death in the rodeo arena. After he retired in the early 2000, Roach never left the arena. He's still helping young bull riders pursue their championship dreams, and one of them approaches him behind the chutes at the Wichita Falls Rodeo in September. The young man is wiry, like Lane Frost, with dark hair and an aw-shucks demeanor. He looks nervous approaching one of his legends, and no doubt taps into the courage he has on reserve for his bull ride later this evening. "What's up, brother?" Roach says. "You doing good? You riding?" "Yeah, well, I've got to find $40 more so I can enter," the bull rider says. Roach opens his wallet and gives him a $50 bill. Opening his wallet, the bull rider grabs some cash to give Roach and notices him shaking his head. "That's just your change," he tells Roach. "No, you keep it. You might need a soda or something." The bull rider doesn't know what to say. Roach smiles at him. "Go on, go on. You'll get me back later." Nodding, the bull rider rushes off to pay his entry fee for the ride. He doesn't stay on the bull, though. Not many do anymore, not since bull breeders began using science to breed and clone bulls from championship bloodlines in the late 90s and early 2000s and training them to become champion bulls from an early age. Only 25% stayed on in 2021, compared with 38% in 2001, according to ProBullStats.com. Back in the day, you might see 3 or 4 great bulls out of 12 or 15, and the rest were mediocre, Roach says. Now, there are lots of them. It wasn't a bullfighter injury that ended Roach's career. Instead, he was out riding horses with his daughter in 2000 when his horse got spooked and threw him. He got a 6-inch metal plate attached to his pelvis to show for it. A few months after the Wichita Falls Rodeo, Roach calls and says he's starting for Hedeman Rodeo memorabilia sales and auction to raise money for organizations such as the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame and the Justin Cowboy Crisis Fund. It's just another way he's trying to help bull riders and bull fighters. He was calling from New Mexico, where he was burying another bullfighter friend. He reminisces about his days with Tuff, Cody, Lane, and Mac, opening up in a way that's rare for cowboys. Roach is in a melancholy mood, and though he worries that rodeo might be dying, a quick Google search reveals it's actually thriving, if far different from the way it was in his heyday. Today, it's more like the NFL, with millions attending events and rodeo athletes in full protective gear, pulling down some big bucks in earnings, due in part to Tuff, Cody, Mac, and Roach. It's enough to make an old bullfighter wistful. "We were like the cowboy rock stars," he says, before hanging up. "We worked all day and rodeoed all night." The buckhorn starts here. Southern California's hidden valley of enchantment is so true to its name that virtually nobody knows about it. An inspired new roadside resort with deep valley roots, Cuyama Buckhorn, aims to change that. By Jordan Rain. If you roam around Southern California for any length of time, like, say, 28 years, You're bound to collect your share of favorite spots and long familiar places to return to as often as possible. They might include the languid state parks of Malibu, the oak-studded winelands of Santa Ynez, the kelp forests of Catalina Island, the Kern River, Joshua Tree, the Friend of Friends Villa in Montecito, the winding mountainscapes of Angels National Forest, the sizzling grid of Palm Springs with its cool mid-century inns and hidden hill towns up the road, and on and on. But what about those not-yet-discovered spots still somehow hiding out there? Are there any bona fide hidden gems left in thoroughly charted SoCal? Until meandering into the Cuyama Valley, a.k.a. the Hidden Valley of Enchantment, for the first time, and checking into its revamped historic roadside resort, Cuyama Buckhorn, for an eye-opening weekend, I didn't think so. Concealed in plain view between the California's south central basin and the coast, the Cuyama Valley, a sequestered expanse of high desert defined by lonely mountain ranges, sprawling farmlands, old ranches, hidden canyons and preserves, and some of the most non-attention-seeking locals in this half of the state, has made a lengthy habit of eluding detection over the last, 9,000 years. The valley's original Native American residents, the Cuyama Chumash, were here for most of that time until the Spanish Padres pulled in, followed by a revolving cast of vaqueros, homesteaders, oil men, farmers, and mid-century copywriters behind the area's Hidden Valley of Enchantment altar moniker. The latest change-inducing arrivals in the valley, a pair of top LA-based designers set on creating, while preserving, the area's one and only getaway resort tucked into the valley's urban hub of New Cuyama, population 660. Until recently, I'd never been to the Cuyama Valley, which is located barely 2 hours from my home in Los Angeles. I'd driven past its borders and access routes gazillions of times, all exaggeration aside, but I'd never even heard of it, let alone Cuyama Buckhorn, in any use of its many earlier manifestations. Apparently, that's not so unusual. Even folks driving directly through this valley tend to miss it all. According to longtime local Jane Slama, in her seminal History of the Area, In This Country, A Chronicle of the Cuyama Valley. Few travelers see that there's much more here than meets the eye as they whiz past along the highway, Slama writes. Most people rarely think of stopping, let alone resting here, thinking all the valley has to offer is a quick meal on the way to Bakersfield or the coast. Slama herself spent years living in nearby Santa Barbara before happening upon New Cuyama, 30 miles away by air, 118 miles by road, and by other measurements, several decades back in time. Eventually, she and her husband moved there, planning to stay for just a little while, which turned into 16 years. Either the valley grabs hold of you and pulls you in, she writes, or it kicks you out within a year or so. With most folks out here, she says, it's the latter. During my own maiden voyage into the Cuyama Valley on a balmy 104-degree morning in June, I'm initially sensing that this place wants to kick me out before I even arrive. Whizzing west toward New Cuyama along the valley's two-lane Route 166, a popular truck corridor between the Central Basin and the coast, I'm sandwiched between a couple of semis in a raging hurry to get somewhere else, especially the one behind me. Rows of corporate farms blur past. Beyond that, the barren brown mountains of the aptly named Caliente Range, Hulk in the distant north. To the south are the Sierra Madres and the lonely outskirts of vast Los Padres National Forest. In the middle, a flat and nowheresville stretches to all horizons with an 18-wheeler runaway blasting through it. Where am I again? Locked in a vice grip between speeding trucks turning me into a 76-mile-per-hour steel sandwich. It's hard to get a real sense of this isolated valley from behind a windshield until the tiny outposts of New Cuyama suddenly appears. All eight streets of it are plunked in the dead center of an isolated valley, lying in a quaint and placid slumber, as Slama nicely describes the hidden community, as if in a desultory enactment of a simpler era. Needless to say, it's easy enough to find the newly unveiled Cuyama Buckhorn without Google Maps. It's the only game in town, right on Route 166, with a giant Cuyama Buckhorn sign. Can't miss it. I pull over, letting the truck traffic barrel past and their engines fade back into the desert wind. Just like that, the scene morphs into something straight out of a desolate scene from a mid-century Western flick. Directly behind the hotel, a field of abandoned old farm equipment sits like an outdoor museum, which it turns out it sort of is. Across the road, another giant sign indicating Cafe looms above the shuttered shack called the Erger Bar. The first bee dangling below. A set designer's obvious move just before I arrived. A few blocks away, an old airplane runway bakes in the sun like a cement company's wrong turn. Who in the world is flying here? When I say a piece of tumbleweed rolls by on cue right then, I know you won't believe me, but I swear to you it does. Smack in this cinematic Wild West hinterland is the new Cuyama Buckhorn. Its lovingly restored sign, recently planted olive trees, gleaming coffee shop windows, metalsmithed hotel lobby arch, and cherry red Cuyama Buckhorn labeled vintage Ford pickup parked out front appear like a 100 megapixel implant in a borderless vintage image. Opened in 1952, the original Cuyama Buckhorn was a motel-style barracks of sorts for ARCO employees back when New Cuyama was an active drilling site, which explains that old vacant runway for long-gone oil execs. Several varied chapters later, the place would recently do time as a short-lived biker bar, before acclaimed Los Angeles designers Jeff Vance and Ferial Sadegian of ID Group acquired the place and incongruously enough added it to their portfolio a few years ago. How did a pair of top designers in L.A. come to buy a heritage motel with a checkered past in the Cuyama Valley and then spend years during a pandemic turning it into something truly special? That wasn't exactly the original plan, Ferio laughs, then explains that before the Cuyama Buckhorn project entered the picture, they'd made an offer on some nearby ranch land in the Cuyama Valley, somewhat on a whim. The guy got back to us and said, "Can you do 16,000 more?" she says. We thought it must be a mistake. Is that all he's asking for? They bought the ranch, which is still sitting dormant, but it also alerted them to the suddenly available Cuyama Buckhorn, ignited their interest and creative passions, and led to the unique property's purchase and next big chapter. This includes design features that have aptly preserved some of its inherent mid-century motel charms while entirely reinventing the place. A brand new pool deck is now outfitted with a jacuzzi and barrel sauna. A fully reimagined grassy courtyard, formerly a parking lot, is now outfitted with a European crushed oyster shell bocce court, a movie screening lawn, and Zen fountains made, with a wink to the past, from repurposed Arco oil drums and pipes. An alfresco dining area is outfitted with a greenhouse for private events, with front row sunset views in the tranquil high desert. 21 guest rooms, once bare-bones company dorms, are now cozy retreats appointed with custom furnishings, modern amenities, and thoughtful touches everywhere, including a s'mores welcome kit, 50s-style modern appliances, and a dog-eared paperback of cowboy poetry on the night table. This place has been through so many iterations since the 50s, it's pretty unbelievable when you start peeling off all those layers, which we have, says Cohn or Jeff Vance, who grew up in the San Fernando Valley and has worked with many a famous name in L.A. Today, he appears right at home holding court with his dedicated hotel staff of New Cuyamans and their families, eating tacos this afternoon in the recently opened pool court during an employee party. When I check in, I'm told there's a private staff shindig by the pool, but I'm welcome to join in and grab a taco and a brew. Cuyama Buckhorn is that kind of place. We didn't get a holiday party last year because of COVID, so we're having one now, said Jeff, casually clad in a tan fedora, plaid shirt, and work boots. He hands me a Tecate. Frankly, I like being up here a lot more than being down there, he says, flipping a thumb in the vague direction of Hollywood, 130 miles and several light years away. Not that this place doesn't have its own unique set of challenges. One of the big ones was taking a project of this magnitude right before COVID hit. We never closed during that whole time, Ferriero says. There were a lot of logistics and precautions that came with staying open, of course, but it was extremely important to us and the community. We're like a big family here. In Cuyama Buckhorn's Buck Stop Coffee Shop and Merritt, a bright, inviting space with a specials chalkboard far surpassing standard coffee shop fare, barbecue brisket tostada with aji amarillo crema, red fife wheat rigatoni arrabbiata. The extended family includes a small crowd of local patrons mingling with the staff like they've known each other for much of their lives, which in many cases they have. Among them is Alicia Taff, owner of Rock Front Ranch, a 300-acre regenerative property on the western edge of the Cuyama Valley, about 25 miles from here. She's dropping by with some honey samples from her organic pesticide-free hives and a bushel of dried jujubes, date-like tree fruits, which she grows on a separate 17-acre, 2,000-tree orchard nearby. Jujubes originate from southern Asia, but they grow quite well in the Cuyama Valley if you know what you're doing, which Alicia Taff definitely does. The following morning, the Cuyama Valley introduces me to my new favorite way to wake up, popping a marshmallow from my Buckhorn s'mores kit, jumping into an empty pool, breaststroking two laps, and melting into a jacuzzi to the sound of morning doves while the desert sun sneaks up on my shoulders. A hike in nearby Aliso Canyon, where an empty oak-canopied campground leads to a winding path into the foothills of Los Padres National Forest, will provide an extra dose of solitude in a secluded valley teeming with it. Walking along a breezy canyon trail dappled in early shadows and perfumed in sage, I'm accompanied by squawky scrub jays, butterflies orbiting my knees, and a bag of jujube chips burning a hole in my pocket. Then, before temperatures climb into the triple digits, I'm back at the Buckhorn. A late breakfast served by Chef Horn delves even deeper into the honest-to-goodness superlatives, including a fruit plate erewith the most perfect honeydew my palate has ever known, from nearby Wiser family farms, and the sweetest imaginable apricots from Rockfront Ranch. A goat cheese and tarragona frittata will be coming out very shortly, Horn tells me. The eggs come from the bar's SZ Ranch, 15 minutes away. They're the creamiest eggs you've ever tasted. I've tasted some pretty darn creamy eggs in my life, but I'm betting he's right.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour, stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.